Welcome back, baby.
Holy cow, TK. Something came to me just now. I was thinking about
it. Share it with me.
I've been trying to think about names for the project in Forest Hill, right? And I've got like this list and they all suck, right? And but like, because it's so unique, right?
Yes.
And because it's so special, and because of the address also, right? How about the... How about the one?
That's such a great idea.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, yeah. All and I'm the sure projects, there's a ton of good energy around that.
Around that name, right?
Because yeah.
All the projects that are called one seem to do very, very,
perfect.
Very well, right?
Perfect, yeah.
Holy cow, TK.
Isn't that incredible? Like, first of all, guys, check out, like, a video that we put out about 6 months ago, or
yeah, maybe
check
we'll
out
insert it now.
When we
maybe?
Had,
yeah, I'm at the one, which may or may not get built, but
may Ooh. Or may not get
drama.
Built.
Ooh.
Oh my god! Yeah,
right
actually,
now.
I never even thought about that.
Start it outright.
May not even get finished. Yeah,
why is
didn't
that?
I think
tell,
about that? That's like target number one.
Jordan Skrinko on the show,
yeah,
and we announced that the one may or may not be completed. As planned. You heard it here.
There
it
have
pretty
been...
obvious, I think, to you, but it wasn't obvious to me.
No,
because
well,
I'm not in the mix.
That's kind of par for the course, I feel, TK.
Most of the news.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
but if you knew anything about development, I mean, this has
or
been
that particular
a...
guy and his
well,
history. Yeah.
This property in particular. I mean, listen, Sam and his history. I don't know if we want to get into all of that kind of stuff here on the show, because that's...
Sure. I agree. We don't want to slander anybody. Just like,
no,
you know,
but
Realtron agents. We don't want to slander them.
Not all of them. But this deal in particular was doomed from the get-go, right?
Yeah.
Sam, bless his heart, I mean, somehow managed to get this property under contract when I guess nobody else could, or... Sam went in there and said,
it.
I'm going to pay you like 200 and something million for this property. And well, here we go. And
when you
this
pay
is...
a lot for a property, you have no choice. You have no choice but to try to get as many stories as possible on it, even if it will lead to you being put under receivership.
Financial ruin.
Right?
Well, this is why they say that, you know, you make your money when you're buying something.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it may not feel like it when you're putting an assembly together or you're buying something in a particular area and people don't really understand what's going on or everybody thinks you're crazy. But I mean, it's one bluer. Okay. It's pretty hard to screw this thing up unless, of course, you paid $300 million for all the land over a decade ago. That's the first really good step to screwing up the best piece of real estate in Canada.
Hey, Daryl, guess what? Everyone's got a decision. They can invest in the one, the greatest project on earth.
Or
they can like, comment, and subscribe to our channel. So every single week they can find out where they should actually be investing.
You can actually get an infinite return on investment by pressing something in this location here.
Don't forget to hit the bell.
Don't forget to hit the bell and TK, the Clips channel, everybody's favorite, the Clips.
The Clips channel is on fire. Check it out.
Right. Yeah. And that's the truth. I mean, it's either this or One Yonge Street, but I think technically One Bloor and Yonge is the epicenter of the earth, especially if you live in Toronto. Right.
And I said it last week, right? I said about the Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett quote that they had in one of their conferences, right? The buildings will stay. The owners will go.
The owners will go.
Yeah.
And it's really true.
And that's what it is. Like, this building will be built. It will happen.
Eventually,
it will be maybe even 85 stories. I don't know. Maybe more, maybe less.
More.
But it'll be built.
It's
just, it will be owned by somebody else. That is a guarantee.
Well, see, technically that was always the plan because it's a condominium. So at some point it was going to be owned by everybody else.
The development will be finished by somebody else.
Yes. Now, will it make any money? Will people get paid back?
Who wants to live at that high of an altitude? It's nauseating.
Well, nauseating for some is comfortable for others and sought after for others. No, but
those people aren't living there, Daryl. They're buying it and they're speculating and they're hanging on to it. And they'll rent it out or they'll keep it vacant or something like that. But nobody's buying those units and wanting to live in them. Like a very small percentage of people actually have that money and want to live at that altitude. It's crazy.
Well, so apparently the units above the 50th floor are all unsold, right? So everything that's currently sold is, I guess, the 50th 40 story
or 50 and below. Yeah.
And below. Yeah. And so, I mean, let's get into the math here, because the math is really
$1.3 billion dollars worth. $1 billion.
Well, it's even more than that. I think it's like 1.6 billion.
That's the South Korean banks sort of end.
Well, you know, when you don't see any banks or local lenders that sound familiar on a deal like this, then it kind of makes you wonder what the hell's going on. Why couldn't he get any funding here? Well, TK, that's because the guys that are here know how to analyze the deal, and they couldn't ever, from day one, make this thing make sense. The only person that really saw this vision that was able to pay the price he paid, I think,
on Canadian soil.
Him, right. Well, and I guess Jenny Coco saw the vision at some point, or saw a vision at some point. I think at one point there were some local heavy hitters involved, but they got out like a long time ago, and they were replaced with all kinds of foreign money. So I guess it depends how far we want to go back in this story, because there's always, well, it's been alleged that the money that it took to start this project was borrowed from a local citizen who is from Iran that is, I guess, a convicted embezzler in Iran, or like in one of the biggest bank scandals to ever hit.
You know, I mean,
Iran.
It could have been just like a period of time, like a phase, you know, they were just going through a phase. They were embezzling funds from local institutions and corporations.
Yeah, I mean,
they came here, clean slate.
Let's not judge, because we don't know what it's like over there. But he somehow made it here and ended up funding this deal, which is, I guess,
with probably his own money.
Well, I mean, I guess now
it was his money.
Right?
I bet you he had ways to prove that it was all obtained legally. Like I'm 100% sure that.
Sure.
He had the paperwork to prove it.
I'm sure he did. Yeah. So he was kind of like swirling around this thing from day one. So, I mean, that adds a layer, I think, at some point when the stories really start coming out, this is going to get interesting. So like, forget about the fact that he borrowed the money from some Iranian embezzlers, and he bought the best property on the continent, or at least on the northern part of the continent
in Canada,
for way too much money. And then on top of everything, I mean, if you're gonna do a project like this, you got to do it right. So you got to pay the best for everything, right? And so, I mean, we can't have any structural supports in the middle of the building, because that would just be crazy to have walls in the interior. So we have to build the craziest exoskeleton frame of all time here, too.
It does look nice.
It looks beautiful. And as Jordan, you know, swiftly pointed out, like, those, they look beautiful. We should be actually in those units right now, TK.
Today, we should be broadcasting. We missed out. Yeah.
But I mean, it is under construction, so it'd be a little dangerous.
Yeah.
So, okay. So we're spending the most money ever on everything, right? In like a very crazy booming market.
And prices are going up. So as these decisions are being made, we're watching pre-construction prices go like through the roof. All sorts of new projections are being thrown around by developers about future market appreciation and how they're coming up with these prices. And somebody just keeps on adding one extra number onto the end of all the other pre-existing numbers just to like, you know, pad it up a little bit more than it was already.
We need to raise another $300 million. You better raise the price in the proforma to $2,300.
I think parking was a little bit cheap. I think we could probably increase the value of parking. That's lockers.
Another thing.
You know what? We were about to give everybody a locker for way undervalue.
Yeah.
Double the price of lockers.
Special lockers. Yeah. But so they go, their plan was to go 10 stories underground too. And I mean, if you've ever tried to do a development, a key factor is eliminating as much underground as you possibly can. And that's why you've seen the policy shift to, you know, no parking, right? Yeah. Well, I'm, a lot of guys
to park. It costs more to create a parking spot than you get when you sell it.
Yeah, it's a loss no matter what. But I mean, it's kind of a necessary evil in most places because people need cars to get around and they like to have them near where they spent $1 million to live. Right?
Imagine what kind of sucker you would be when you bought that building and you had to go to P10 every single time. Oh. And you're like, oh, geez, I forgot my wallet. Oh.
I forgot my oxygen. Like I may not make it back up to
there's no earth. Like visitor parking, like 15-minute parking. You got to like go all the way back down just to enter. That would be painful.
What a good place to have, like, if all of a sudden you start hearing sirens everywhere here in Toronto one day and like people are running for the shelters or bomb shelters that don't even exist. Are there any?
I'm going to P10.
P10 in one bluer.
Out again. Yeah.
Maybe they're one way or another. That's actually a really good idea because I'm sure nobody will be there because this thing, I don't know.
They don't have the passcode. They don't have the fob.
No fob.
They don't have a fob, so they can't even get there.
It's not stopping me, TK.
Just saying, you don't have a fob. It's going to be tough. Are you a real estate agent and you're looking to make a change? Anywhere in Ontario, guess what? We're hiring. Frankly & Associates, number one team in the GTA for all RE/MAX teams, number one team for all teams from all companies for number of units sold throughout Toronto. So if you're looking to make a change, best decision I ever made was to join Frankly & Associates. Go to jointeamleo.com and we can set up a call.
Please subscribe and
well,
I'm bouncing all over the place because this story is just so goddamn.
He's building 10 stories down and then he's
10 stories down, 80 stories up.
He's taking on way more expenses than he needs to.
Now, but then he gets approved for another like 11 stories, which is like, oh my God, now we're going to maybe make some money here because.
No, that was just pay off the last guy he just borrowed the money from. That wasn't even the profit region.
Right. And this thing became like a Ponzi scheme where it was like, we need somebody to come in, right, to pay off the interest on this other loan. And what just happened now is what's happening all over the place and what we've been talking about forever. And I would like to lay claim to talking about it first. But like this renewal crisis is about to heat up unless, of course, for some weird reason, rates start coming down.
They're not coming down. That Country Garden company in China, I mean, they're $186 billion in liabilities. Like you're talking about like some serious liquidity that's just about to blow up in smoke and that, you know, people are not going to see ever again.
China just injected $100 billion into their economy in one day this week.
Sure, but that's the economy. But think about just all these developers. So the developers on the one or the lender, sorry, like 1.3 billion plus all the other stuff. Just imagine how much of that will just disappear. Like they're not getting that money back.
Well, but
there's no scenario that you can forecast that they're going to be able to sell the remaining units enough to pay off all the creditors.
Well, but check this out. One of these idiots just gave them another $300 million draw to keep the thing going. And somehow the trustee has appointed Sam Mizrahi to stay on as the with equity and as the general contractor on this thing. Like, keep the thing moving. Let's go. Yeah. Let's go. Let's get this thing finished.
Well, he's got the most to lose. So I don't think anyone else really wants that position.
Who the fuck wants to leave him in charge, right?
But who would want to actually try to clean this mess up?
Oh, my God. Well, once it's actually like the mess is really done, because, yeah, nobody's going to want to touch this with a 10-foot pole right now.
No,
and that's why they're throwing good money after bad to see if they can outrun this thing, finish the building, and get some of their fucking money back.
Yeah.
Because right now, it is not looking good.
There's no developer who can just come in and just take over and just finish the projects.
No chance. Because this thing
is upside down. Because of how much money they need to be able to take over. That debt that they would have to be able to assume in order to be able to, it's not possible.
No. And like, let's do the math here. You got a calculator? Because we have 346 of the units sold for $675 million. Okay.
Okay.
There's only 70 units left that somehow have to cover the rest. So how does that math work? Unless these 70 units are like five times the size of the rest of those that sold, right? And sell for triple the price.
Yeah.
Like, how does it, why are you putting more money into this thing?
It doesn't. And that's the problem is you can't just leave the building unfinished. And you can't like scale it down. Like, it's just such a predicament.
Hold on. But like, this gets even worse, TK, because let's not forget that a year ago, 2 years ago, I think it was in the middle of the pandemic, Apple said, like, guys, what the fuck? This thing was supposed to be ready like 6 years ago. Yeah. Our flagship in Canada cannot wait any longer. And we're out. And now, so they're suing them.
They know, obviously. When trouble's brewing.
They know when trouble's brewing. Or it's like, you know what? We'll find another place like around the corner and we'll just do it there. Or
they do enough business with landlords around the globe to understand when somebody's in over their head.
Yeah, when something smells fishy.
Right? That's no good. But like think about that. What is the solution? The solution is to have the original developer stay on for the lenders to protect their own interest by injecting more money. This is the only, like, there is no other solution.
No, right now there's no other solution.
Inflate the balloon and just kick the can down the road until they get it all done. And then they'll recuperate, you know, 60 or 80% of the amount of money that they put in.
This is
everyone just says that was a horrible investment, and they'll start suing everybody. And there'll be a bunch of lawsuits for the next 5 years trying to sort out who owes who what.
And this thing is gonna sit. This thing eventually, after whatever amount they're gonna inject trying to finish this thing,
they'll need to get loans to finish off the units, inventory loans to just be, and they'll just be vacant units where you'll see on the MLS 40 million, 35 million.
Who's gonna want to work on this job now?
Nobody's gonna buy them, and they're just gonna be sitting there, and they're gonna be waiting. Eventually someone's gonna have to do it.
Like, what contractors are gonna want to keep moving here? Like,
well, they'll have to renegotiate. Yeah, exactly. Because the money, dear, like, you explained this to me. Sorry, I'm interrupting you a lot today. You explained this to me. The $1.3 billion, like, there's no way they've already given him all that money. There must have been draws for construction loans and all that kind of stuff. Like, he's only got freaking half the building built.
But this is the thing. I don't know. I mean,
right?
Like, I got to think that there's a construction charge against the property that's getting released in draws, but
yeah,
they just gave them another 300. I don't know what the actual totals are. And that's why I'm sitting here trying to do math going, where the fuck is all the money?
Yeah.
How much is actually out there?
There's no way that that $1.3 billion was out. It's just that's what the charge is. And that there is like construction financing. He's getting draws based on each stage. They're not giving him that much money.
I don't know.
In advance.
I can't imagine. Where would that money have gone? That'd be fucking crazy. What did he
spend that money on?
Right? Yeah. And that's probably the reason why they're willing to give more, because they kind of have to contractually, unless, he just defaulted.
Yeah.
So this whole thing is a fucking mess. He defaulted on the loan. The renewal for whoever is coming into this thing is going to be at a rate that is like so disgusting. And so, right. And that's just going to push up the end prices somehow, which I don't know how any of this is going to work. So somehow.
Doesn't.
No.
It doesn't. The lenders are going to take a bath and that they're going to be screwed, and that this is what happens in these, like, there's plenty of buildings where this, like, you know, Trump was involved with a lot of those buildings, and there was a lot of stuff during the 2008 recession that I was reading about in Florida. There was a lot of buildings that were built because everybody was hot on, you know, vacation properties, and then everyone pulled out. Very similar. The lenders lose. That's it. The developer goes bankrupt. The lenders lose money. Eventually everything gets built because it has to, and they sell for market value. And those units will eventually sell for whatever they're able to sell them for.
Well, and so what happens is, the lender generally, you know, is putting together a conglomerate of smaller investors, right?
Sure.
So like you say, it's sucking the lender, but it's like this giant group of investors. individuals who lost a bunch of money.
They pull now, money together.
They're all supposed to be accredited, which means, I think accredited really just means like you can afford to lose this money.
That's exactly what it means.
Right. So like, I guess at the end of the day,
accreditations or whatever the word is, you know,
the risk is so spread out that like the $1.3 billion to some South Koreans spread across all of Korea. It sucks, but like, what's going to happen? But I think this is going to get deeper. Like, come on. $675 million out of 346. They said $1 billion 10 years ago. Like, I just watched an interview with him from 10 years ago where he's talking about this, how he's putting Toronto on the map with this thing, and this is the best thing since sliced bread, and it's going to cost $1 billion. So, I mean, if they thought it was going to cost $1 billion 10 years ago, I promise you, it didn't cost $1 billion. From what I heard, and I could have been reading this wrong and hearing this wrong, but they're in like $1 billion into construction already, and they've built 40 stories. And I don't know what makes sense, because this build, like if you were to do a normal construction performa, I think you have to like double it at least for the frame of this thing. Because this thing is unprecedented and unheard of, the way that they're building the structure, right? Yeah. So I don't know how much more that costs. But then if you don't have revenue from 19,000 square feet of Apple on top of not having the rest of the sales for this thing, what happens if we start to hear that some of those sales never really happened and that they were just to get to threshold so we could get construction finance?
I don't think that's the case.
Well, okay,
that is so purely speculative
and totally speculative, you know, and for entertainment
don't take that information. And
but hang on a sec. So Jenny Coco's company that was finance something, I forget what they're called, but they just went bankrupt in 2021, some private lending company. Okay, so Jenny Coco, big empire, Coco Paving, got bought out by GFL for bajillions of dollars. I don't even know how much. All of a sudden she's got all this money, so I guess she must have met Sam at a bar somewhere or on some island or on a yacht, and the two of them got talking. Right. Wherever they she's married. I'm sure it was all on the up and up. They probably met on some yacht somewhere in the south of France. And there's like, hey, I'm building the best property on the planet. And she's like, oh, well, you know, I live right near there. So would you like $1 billion? I don't know what happened. But the fact is that her company that went bankrupt a couple of years ago was in cahoots with BlackRock, which that I think implies something, maybe not, but we've got BlackRock here, we've got bankruptcy here, we've got overpayment for everything, we've got all kinds of foreign investors coming in, and now we have this, TK. So I think that the likelihood of weird shit coming out of this story as time goes on is pretty high. And I don't know what they're going to come up with, but I mean, if we've seen the accounting for Sunrise and for State View, was it State View? And I mean,
basically accounting just means what we want you to think our business is doing. That's basically what it is, because they can put whatever they want on any sort of unaudited reports and just be like, here's the books, check them out.
Yeah, and you've got these analysts that are like just out of school, right? Yeah. That
regardless of who they are, they can fool anybody. They can fool the most experienced people if there's only so much information provided, right? Here's the smell test, right? And this is true for your property. Who are the other investors? So someone comes to you and says, I got this great investment. You should get involved, man. I'm telling you, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. Who else is investing? Who are the other investors, and find out what their backgrounds and what their experiences are, especially if you're a new investor, accredited or not. You need to look at, okay, what is the likelihood of this being a good investment? Because it's easy to fool me. You could tell me all sorts of stuff about one project or the next. If I'm not, you know, experienced dealing with them, I've only maybe done it a few times, or, you know, understand so much about the project, it's easy for me to be fooled. But if you tell me that you got, you know, some of the guys that you have lined up for your project, it's like, all right, those guys know way more than me and the average person, even the average developer. These are all the big shots of the industry. If they feel like the project's good, if they feel like they've vetted enough of the details to say this is a good project to put their own money in, then that's more than enough. And then because we knew that and I passed that along, we got even bigger people to come and join who were all looking at it going like, geez, if all these guys are doing it, I don't even need to see the deck. Just send me the information. Where do I invest? Because
it's true.
It's the truth. Like that's
true.
You can have the best deck in the world, but at the end of the day, what does that mean? But who are the investors, right?
Who are the investors?
I would have had red flags, and maybe not as much as I would have in hindsight now, because I understand what happened with the one, but all the Toronto investors, the people with the money, looked at that deal and were like, I don't think so. And when people started to see that no one else was interested, he had a hard time getting money. And so he found Coco, somebody who had money from another outside industry, who didn't have those same type of experiences and things to draw on in order to be able to make a sound financial decision. And of course, she ended up investing with, somebody who, had a lot of great ideas, but unfortunately not the right plan to make it work.
No. And so this is what I try and tell people, like when I'm being serious and I'm not on this show, right, and I'm working or people are asking me serious questions. Like if you go listen to the podcast I was just on, what's it called? Rise Podcast.
Yeah. Austin. Yeah. He was on our show
and
had us both on his podcast recently. So check out Daryl's episode. It just got released yesterday.
Yeah, and TK's Rise. Coming up. But when people ask me, like, what's the most important part about development? Like, anybody can drive by a property and go, oh, wow, if you bought those three, that's a great deal right there. And it's like, well, what are you basing that
they're
on? Because they're
other.
Next to each other, fuckers. Like, I'm so tired of hearing this all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, I got a great deal. There's three houses beside each other. How much? I don't know, but they're beside each other. Anyways. The key, I think, and I could be way off here, okay, but the key to development is knowing what the hell you can do before you buy the thing, and really knowing what the hell you can afford to pay based on knowing what you're going to get on that thing, right?
Yeah.
And not just buying something and paying a lot of money so you can put together a few properties together and say, I did this, right? Because look, you can go put together the best property in Canada and not get it funded.
And lose everything.
And potentially lose everything.
Go bankrupt. Yeah.
But like...
The one that I brought you this week downtown.
Okay.
Without giving the address or the location.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Remember we were talking about the skinny...
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, in that situation, right, that obviously getting all those properties together would be great. But at the end of the day, is it really that, you know, much more value than, you know, what they would be on their own to somebody else? Maybe not. I'm just saying.
No, but this is a perfect example because somebody, look, maybe I'll pass on it because I won't see it, right? Yeah. And maybe 20 other people will pass on it. And the one guy that sees it, if he's right.
Yeah, he looks like a genius.
He looks like a genius.
But really though, so for example, that other client I told you about at Sherborne and Bloor, where there was those 10 properties, you know, and they ended up selling for like 4 times market value, you know, because of the land assembly. Those examples are where, you know, people, and then the developers made money on top of that. And then the guy who's eventually going to build it is going to make money on top of that. Right. Those are the type of properties where people can really, you know, see that type of lift. But the average one, just because you put them together, it doesn't mean that they're worth anymore. You might just have to pay market value. And then you've got something like half decent.
Right.
But if you end up going into the situation, like we were dealing with stuff in Parkdale and different places where, you know, the performer showed you could pay more for a certain property. Then there's the other one that we're working on where it shows you can't. There's just too many other restrictions, right? Yep.
It's a weird time right now because you see, I feel like it's Metropia at Yonge and Bloor, just like on a 40-foot lot, just put in an application for like 50 stories or some crazy height for this little pencil building, which, I mean, they've done it in New York. They've done not that skinny here. I've looked at properties like that in the past, which I know, like, I mean, I'm no Metropia. Metropia can try whatever the hell they want. Probably failed assembly, I gotta think, because who the hell buys a 40-footer thinking they can put 50 stories on? But it's right near the biggest subway hub in the frickin' country also. Right? Mm-hmm. Yonge and Bloor subway is like the epitome of where you should be getting height.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, like, what if they get it there? Holy shit. Then you're going to start seeing all these little pencil buildings that are like banging into each other up at the 70th story, right? Yeah. Oops. Didn't think about
that.
Which
doesn't make sense. But I guess that's what you got to do, right? When you got to look at how do you create more housing? Maybe we're going through a period right now where because the city's being a little bit looser with their planning, you know, planning, I believe, like I agree, and maybe you disagree with me, Daryl, but planning is there in order to protect the integrity of the city, to be able to preserve the aesthetic looks, to be able to preserve the culture, the traffic, the you know, taste that everybody in the city has. You know, you don't want something to stick out and then all of a sudden everyone's like, why did they build that? Like, there's a ton of stuff built in the 70s all throughout, like, probably the world that you just look at today and you're just like, man, that's ugly, you know? And whatever was going on in their head during that time and they were just letting people design and do it whatever they want, it really, you know, looks bad now and you just kind of want to get rid of it. So they're trying to create things that are going to be like long lasting. So I understand.
That wasn't style choice. That was a cost choice in a time where they needed a ton of houses quickly. Like kind of now we need some.
But at the end of the day, they still approved it. And you're absolutely right. I'm not disagreeing with you. And right now it's the exact same thing. So now they're fast tracking all these different types of projects. Right. And we're going to look back 50 years and go, man, why did we do that?
Yeah.
Right.
We need more of those twirly 40, things like in Mississauga.
A 40 foot building.
Like, are those even better? Those twirly things in Mississauga? Or those stupid things at Yonge and Sheppard that curve? Like, are these buildings nicer?
There's a couple nice buildings that look nice, I think. Yeah.
Everything's horseshit. Even One Bloor East is like, they're just big fucking boxes with some weird balconies on them. It's really a shame. Yeah. But again, you're in a cost crunch from day one, especially if you're behind the eight ball from the very first minute you make an offer, right? Generally, when you're buying an assembly, you're hoping that you know something that nobody else doesn't know. Was that English? You're hoping you know something nobody else knows, right?
Yeah.
And even if somebody else has bought it before, you're hoping that you've figured out another way of looking at this thing. Because in my opinion, and I'm only so successful at this, I'm not like as great as some of these other guys, but like, if you can find a way to pay somebody more than market, but like not ridiculously overpriced that it kills the performa, this is the sweet spot. And the only way to do that is to know I can get this. So for example, our deal, when you brought it to me, thinking it was whatever, instantly I'm looking at it going, okay, six-story building. I know it, right? I told you from day one, I'm going to put a six-story building on here for sure, for sure, for sure, for sure. And that is what allowed me to pay what I paid for that property, right? Because anybody else, if they were looking at it the way everybody else looked at it, they're like, like it doesn't really make sense to me at this price, right?
Yep.
But it turns out when you prove that it's right, you can get...
Then everyone comes back and says, hey, you got such a great deal on that property. I can't believe it. Oh my gosh. Why didn't I think of that?
I should have.
That's been all the deals that I've witnessed that you've put together over the last few years. It's always been the same thing. Everyone thinks you're crazy when you're putting it together. Yeah. And then after it's done, they go, Oh, yeah.
How do I get in on the next one? Yeah. But this happens, and this is what happens. So that's actually interesting. So even back in 2006, 2007, I built one house, okay? And everybody in the world wanted to be my partner on the next ones. Everybody. Because it was a frenzy, right? 2006, 2007 was bananas here. And so now, like, if you can get something that over appraises in this market right now, that's fucking insane. That means you bought really well, right?
So, like,
how far down is this thing gonna go? If it keeps going down, okay, let's say everybody's right and it's higher for longer and prices don't go down.
Another 20%.
Interest rates don't go down, another 20%. So if you can buy something that appraises 20% higher than you paid, holy moly, right?
Now
holy
moly. Working on the deal. And then when everything does bounce back, you'll be already zoned, ready to build. And now it'll be time to go.
But it's not normal, because normally what happens is people pay too much money to put an assembly together, right? And so you have to leverage the thing like crazy and raise all kinds of money, right? And your appraisal comes in at under what you paid. Like rarely does something come in over what you paid. Like it's always way under, right? Like even that last one in Parkdale, we're paying people for houses that are worth $1.6 million. Like we paid one guy $5 million, right? With like a 65% VTB or 75% VTB.
That was a special circumstance.
No, but this is what
double would be high. That one property is a special circumstance.
Okay, but the other ones were $3 million each, right?
Yeah, double would be like a huge premium. Usually maybe 20% premium would be like, you know, where you need to be or else it doesn't work.
Well, so, but how are they double ever going to sell that, right? Who's going to buy that?
Who's going to buy what?
Well, who's the owners are not going to want to take a 20% haircut yet.
I'm just saying the people who you're buying from, right? The people who currently own the properties, you need to pay them about a 20% premium in order to make the deals go together. Not every site that you're going to put together has enough meat on the bone for you to pay double.
No, most of them don't.
Exactly.
Most of them don't. Yeah. But what's crazy is like in an up market I'm always on with the appraisers, right? Like in an up market, you could basically get an appraiser to do anything. Right. If you needed to, or if you wanted to, or they were just throwing out crazy numbers. But now, like, try and manipulate an appraisal now. Like,
I'm getting a lot of calls from appraisers actually
looking for work.
No. Just trying to clarify. Like, I think they're doing their job now more, because I wasn't getting any calls before. And now I'm getting, so I'll sell a property and then the appraisers will call me, especially all the commercial stuff.
That's what I'm saying.
They'll call me and they'll say, hey, you know, I was going over this and, you know, what was the vacancy and, you know, what was the rent or like, you know, like how many acres was it? Or just on a condo I sold, you know, someone called and said, was that renovated? What was, you know, the deal? Like they're really diving into things right now.
They're really getting deeper because now they have to like, They've probably had a few calls in the last year or two from people that said, did you come up with this value here? And then the other end of the conversation was probably like you told me to put that number.
That's what the buyer paid.
Hey, don't say that.
That was the market. The buyer paid $3 million. So I put $3 million.
Right, because the market price is whatever somebody is willing to pay.
But the private, so the private, what's going on right now, just so you don't know, just so you you know, you wouldn't know this, but the amount of private lenders who have had to take over properties has increased. So whether it be
Or
it was just like, you know, forced sales where people were basically selling right before the private lender took them power of sale, or they, you know, before they got their writ of possession, but they had the notice for sale, like, you know, some, those type of stages. There's a lot of those going on. Well, and so the appraisals are coming back. So sometimes we're getting calls from people and saying, we're getting calls from the lenders sometimes saying, look, what can I do? What can I do? I just lend it. Sometimes they lent on the second. They gave the guy 50, 100 grand as a second mortgage. And they're like, no, it was good. The equity was there. I had an appraisal. I'm like, send me the appraisal report. And I'm looking at the appraisal and it's like July 2022. Comps used sold in February, March, and April 2022. I'm like, yeah, this is in July. And like prices had dropped like 15% by this point. And yet the comps that they're using are all from the peak. So yeah, the appraisal came in and it said 800,000 on it, but it wasn't worth 800,000 at that time. So it was worth 750. And now it's dropped another X amount. So it's only worth 700. And the guy didn't take care of it. And it looks like hell. And so if you go and take over, their first mortgage is 700. So you're walking away from your money, or you take it over and you start paying the first mortgage, and then you rent it out and you hold on to it. I said, I don't know what to tell you. There's no equity left. And he's position. So he's got to hold on to it.
Like, there must be people that go into default, get themselves out of default, and then go back into default and dance that line a bit,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And those private lenders, or most lenders, are probably
lenders sometimes
letting them kind of dance that line a bit because they keep catching up. And
They'll go to a higher risk lender. So a lot of times they'll be with one lender. They can't pay it anymore. Maybe that guy was like 8%, you know? And so like he just wants his money back. There is some equity left. Maybe the loan to value was like 60%, 65%, something like that. And so then the people are just like, oh my God, what do we do? So then they go to some other shark. And he goes, yeah, okay, 80% loan to value, no problem, no job, no income, no assets, no credit, no, you know, just pay me. And then it's like 4% in fees. And then, you know, and then that guy's just like, yeah, pay. And hopefully they sell the property and they get out and they walk away with much less money than they could have if they just sold instead of refinanced. But they're trying to hang on to their pride. And if the market was off, if the appraisal was off, then that new lender now could be on the hook, and there could be a big problem there too. So it depends. But it's a lot of the high end stuff. There's a lot of high end listings right now. Cottages are getting swamped. There's so many different cottage properties out there. Very few people are buying cottage properties. Inventory is climbing. The luxury market's moving. Like, the luxury market's moving. I'm looking at things above 3 million in Toronto. I got something coming up that's over 4, and I'm looking, I'm like, there's sales here. I'm like, what's going on here? I'm trying to sell a $600,000 town bungalow, one bedroom in Leslieville, and I can't sell it, you know? Like, where are the people trying to buy houses, right? Where are they? But there's luxury properties out there, luxury buyers right now, because I guess they feel like because they have cash, they don't need to worry about interest rates, and that they're getting a good deal. It's cheaper than what it would have been a year ago.
Discount time, for sure. Yeah. And if they need to buy, and they need to buy here, then why the hell not? If they're not taking any debt. Beautiful.
Exactly. I got to talk about one more thing.
Well, hold on. This same topic, though, if we just carry it over to the original topic, like, how are all these units, the 346 that have sold already, how are they going to appraise?
They had letters from the bank. Don't worry.
Yeah, they got a letter from the bank at 1.75% from 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. These people started buying, like, I don't even know how long ago. When did this launch? This must have launched 6, 7, 8 years ago. 17, six years ago. 17.
But anyways, that's
freaking crazy. That's a lot of people that are gonna be like,
so
those are
a good question, though. That's actually a good point. Is when did these contracts get sold? I don't have this answer. When did these contracts get sold? And does it make sense? The last condo building that I was dealing with on receivership, they terminated all the other agreements. Those people were happy because they sold peak prices. And so they were like, geez, I paid $200,000+ more than I should have. And so they were happy to get out. Now, these people, if they bought and it was like a low price, maybe it was like $1,700 a square foot, and now they want $2,000, will those people be as happy to be getting out of the contracts? But I wonder what that situation is like. And I mean, we'll find out.
It got to be over 2,000 a foot there too.
I don't know. Depends on how long ago it was sold.
But so who's buying there? There's investors bought there thinking they're going to rent 80%
these things out? 70-80%
are investors. Yeah. What the fuck? Like, what the hell are people thinking?
They're investing money. They got money.
10% appreciation per year. Who cares if you even rent it out? Rental guarantee. You can leave it empty. What the fuck is going on here, TK?
I'm
going
to get $8,000 a month from the rent in 2025.
In 2025?
They said immigration is going to increase.
I think it was supposed to be finished next year.
All right. But let's talk about the topic that everyone wants to hear about.
What does everybody want to hear about?
Everyone wants to hear about the Remax guy who made the insensitive post.
The insensitive post Remax guy? Who the fuck are you talking about? This? No, who could think about this nonsense?
X or Twitter or whatever.
I don't know. Maybe the war in Israel?
About the war. Yeah.
Oh, he made a comment about the war.
He made a comment about the war, and it was a very tasteless, poorly timed joke. And I'm sure he meant it as a joke. But he basically said something. I won't even talk about it. I don't want to say what side or whatever. But bottom line is he made something that was incredibly insensitive and appalling.
Waterfront property or something.
Whatever.
Oh,
okay,
I
leave it alone.
That.
Leave it alone. Right? So this is okay. One right away. I'm like, oh my God, I gotta stop making those skits. People are eventually
eventually Daryl's gonna write something that gets us in trouble.
Hate me for it, because this guy got hung out to dry, Daryl. You would not believe what. So he's been fired from Remax Realtron. His I think his license is suspended. Like this guy's whole life, and he's like a top producing agent. North of the city, and his whole life now there's been death threats. He can't go home.
Really?
His family is being threatened.
No
it's
way.
Serious. This is a serious thing, man.
Well, wouldn't have put that up.
This is not just you're joking around about somebody's financial. I know we joke a lot about people's money and the stupid decisions investors make, and half of them are idiots, and that's why we can make these jokes. And I'm not that much smarter. Talk to me about Bitcoin anytime. You'll find out. Yeah. But I'm just in this particular situation, this guy really did some damage.
How do you come back from that?
That's tough.
No.
And that this is the power of the cancel culture. Not to say he didn't deserve it that's besides the point. In any regard, in any situations, if you say the wrong thing and you're putting it out there, risk in your business, especially a realtor, a successful realtor. You got a business. This is how you feed your family. You got to be careful.
Sure. I mean, and we dance a line for sure. And sometimes I trickle onto the wrong side of the line, but
you got some overspray.
A little bit of overspray. But that, I saw that. And that was definitely too soon. And
not too soon. That was inappropriate at any time.
Well, listen.
Yeah, that was not. Come on. That was brutal.
I'm sure a comedian will get laughs from that same joke at some point soon.
Maybe.
But
regardless.
It's pretty what even something. Goes through your head before you hit that send button on that one? Even me, sometimes it's don't do it. And I don't do it because
you got some deleted tweets.
If you saw all the deleted ones, that's where the gold is.
You're out there.
I should do a paywall service where you could see the deleted tweets. That would be so funny.
Someone would just copy that, screenshot it, and post it on their own Twitter and just try to hang you because they want to hang you.
Everybody wants
to hang you forever,
girl. They're trying to hang me since
they've
tried
to get me a few times too, but I just don't care. And I'm not on Twitter. So it's kind of hard to hang me if I'm not there.
My mom tried to choke me out at birth. TK, what everybody really wants to talk about, I think.
Okay.
One, we have a prime minister that anywhere this guy goes now gets booed off the stage and yelled at by people and just told that he's a fucking idiot. It is normal to say fuck Trudeau or to put up a fuck Trudeau sign in public.
Half those people voted for him. Just remember that, okay?
Half of those people voted
half
for him.
Half of them voted for him.
Does he have a chance?
Listen, politics, we got two parties. You got the guy who's in power and you got the other guy.
Is there only two?
There's only two parties. Come on.
It's kind of dumb.
Right. And so right now we've got the guy who's in power. And, you know, chances are the other guy's going to get voted in again soon.
So, but let's think about this Trudeau guy. Like, who wants to live like this? Like, who, what does he get out of this?
The other guy's going to be able to fix it.
A lot of fucking money, though. Like, what does Justin Trudeau get out of putting himself out there like such a fucking piece of shit that everybody, like, even the other leaders are like, whoa, this guy's going over the line, even for us, right? You got Putin going like, oh, God. I don't want to pull a Trudeau over here. This would be suicide, right? Like, what the hell? Nobody wants to.
Putin's worried about his own political, you know,
he just doesn't want to look like
retaining
Trudeau,
his own political
right?
power, you know, by not doing what Trudeau, he's watching there. Like, even though he's the only one in the election over in Russia, he's looking, he's like, well, I better not do what Trudeau's doing. They might find a way to get rid of me if I did what that guy did.
Yeah, good thing we didn't do that.
That's a good comedy a little bit.
So,
we'll have to get Putin on one of the skits
for real. Like, the guy lost his wife. The guy's got no life. Everywhere he goes, people want to throw shit at him. What is he doing? Why is he doing so many stupid, fucking crazy things? Like, what the hell is this guy? Something weird's going on. Like somebody's got his hand up his butt. Okay. Speaking of hands up butts, let's talk about interest rates, because anybody that has to renew soon has a giant hand in their butt right now, or at least it feels
it's in their
like
wallet.
It, right?
Yeah.
Their hand is in their wallet. Why? Why bother going in there? There's nothing in there anymore.
I've recently just been like super like observant about just where all the money goes. And you're just kind of like, it's not even just interest rates, like just the whole inflation thing. You know, that's kind of dragging on people. Like even if you have, you know, a set income or, you know, set budget or whatever, like just there's these other little parts of life that just are getting more expensive. I went out for breakfast this morning, and my breakfast is normally between $45 and $60 for a family of four with tip and everything else. And today it was $71 because there's a new owner, right? And I tried to use my Amex.
These are
and
better
got
eggs.
Denied because they
way
don't take
better.
Amex. And I was just like, ah. So then I had to use my Visa. And so then I paid with the Visa, and then it was $71. And I was like, so I get less points and I had to pay like $10 more.
And you probably got less food too. This seems to be the way. So, but they're telling us that CPI is kind of down. So do you feel like anything has come down in price in the last
CPI is just a rate of increase. So it's not like it's gone down. It's just, it's the rate of increase is slowing down. Yeah.
Rate of increase.
I don't think that that's debatable.
You can't even feel that.
And I mean, I'm definitely seeing the, you know, gas prices are down, and I feel like prices have stabilized in most places. Like the breakfast story is just because the guy that there's a new owner, but I don't feel like there's any major increases anymore at this point in time. I feel like inflation is slowly going to get back down to 2-3%, but I still think we're like 2 years away.
Well, okay.
I think we need a major recession to really like cut off this demand. And to the point where like people are just like broke as hell and they're not buying anything anymore.
So what do you think is going to happen with rates? What do you think is going to happen with rates?
And then they'll be able to justify rates going back down, but they're not going to lower rates until everyone has so much pain. They're going to be doing these announcements and they're going to be sitting there and Tiff is going to be reading out like unemployment is 6.2% and the GDP is now contracted 6 consecutive quarters. Like he's going to be reading out all these bad stats that everyone's going to be like, oh my God, we're in trouble. And they're going to say, please lower the rates. And he's going to go, we're going to maintain the course, because they're going to be gun shy because they just went through this. I talked about this in the last show. They just went through, they lowered rates in order to be able to put more money into people's pockets. But what people did was they went and bought more houses and drove house prices up further. Therefore, their debt service ratios remained the same and the same amount of money every month came out of their pocket. So it didn't even... I know what they're trying to do is to simulate the gun, but it didn't even work. The Canadians are all drunk on real estate. So they all just started spending their money on real estate. As soon as you give us cheap rates, we're like, well, we're not going to go and put that into the economy. We're going to go and put that into more housing. And we drive up prices again. And then there's no money going into the economy. And so they said that rates and house prices are both too high. One of them needs to come down and it's not going to be rates. And they're going to hang on to those
rates. So what do you think is going to happen?
As
Thursday.
They possibly can, until they are saying F Tiff on little signs at these announcements like Trudeau, because that's how much pressure is going to be needed to get them to lower rates again.
So you think they're going to raise rates?
I don't think they need to raise rates anymore, but I think based on the inflation numbers coming back, they're not going to. But I mean, what the hell do I know? I've been wrong every single time. But I don't think they need to raise rates any further. But I know for sure, like I'm absolutely positive, and I'll bet you know, my co-host position on this show that they're not lowering rates anytime soon.
Not lowering rates anytime soon. So you feel like they're going to pause this week. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I feel like a pause. I feel like a pause is justified. Yeah.
Pause is justified. Pause. So you would think that if you really do want to kill this thing, that it would make sense to just kind of give it one last stab in the head.
Oh, there's more.
Like it was a zombie. You know, you gotta, yeah, you gotta kill the head. You can't, yeah, just shoot it in the body. Look, 8,000 times.
There's more raises coming, you know?
More raises coming, TK says. So yeah, when is anybody's guess, right, TK?
Yep. I read the banks, what the banks said, and they all kind of gave their little thing, all the major banks, top five banks, and all the other small banks, they all sort of gave their predictions. And most of them said one or two more raises are still in the cards. You know?
Still in the cards. I mean,
so I mean, I'm gonna just copy what the bank said. I'm pretty sure that they're smarter and more knowledgeable than me. So do you want me to read it out for you?
No. What the bank said? No, you don't have to read out what the bank said. They don't have a goddamn clue.
They don't have a clue either. That's exactly what I said.
TD says one thing, CIBC says another, BMO says something different.
Bank of Canada is done now, although risks are going to happen still. 50 basis points cut likely in 2024. RBC hiking cycle's over. Rate cuts Q3.
You just said no cutting anytime soon. 2024 is around the corner.
The banks are saying.
Oh, I thought you said you're going with them.
5% is the high point. Expect
going against them,
TK. Two potential cuts in the end of 24, CIBC, no more hikes this year, rate cuts mid-2024. They're basically all saying the same thing.
Yeah, fuck them. They don't have a goddamn clue.
They don't know
clue.
What they're talking
they
about
don't
either.
Have a fucking clue. Okay, let's end on this note here, TK, because I think this is interesting, and this is definitely inflationary also. I don't see anything deflationary at all. I don't understand how even the rate of increase could go down. But anyways, TK, they are seriously talking about UBI here in Canada, and it's picking up steam and it's passing legislations. This is so inflationary because do you remember this little thing called CERB, TK?
Yeah, CERB was different, you know.
How is it different? It was free CERB, money
everybody
for everyone.
Got.
Right. Everybody gets UBI, bro.
I don't think a UBI is going to be for everybody.
Universal.
I understand what it is, but
basic.
I don't think it should be
it's
for
in
everybody.
The title.
I know.
It's not for everybody. It's 16-year-olds and under can't use it to buy smokes and beer and stuff.
Damn it. Illegal
right?
cannabis.
You have to be 17 to use it for legal cannabis and beer.
Yeah.
And cigarettes. I can't even believe they still make cigarettes. That's a tragedy. But seriously, TK, what the hell is everybody thinking here? Who's paying for this?
I don't understand all the ramifications, but I believe that UBI will be a necessity in the future of our modern world.
I agree, but this is, you can kiss, like inflation is going to have to disappear from our vocabularies. Because
and we'll replace it with automation.
And then what?
And then
the
all
robots
those,
are making
all the jobs
the money.
That no, but there'll be lots of jobs that automation creates as well too. But the UBI will keep everybody stable. I think they're going to figure out inflation. I think that they're going to start figuring out price fixing. They're going to start figuring out how to be able to, you know, regulate the corporations. I think that they're going to be able to regulate even like pension and wage increases. Like it'll be super controlled, and no one likes what I'm saying right now, but eventually that's the government will have more and more authority to be able to do those things. It's just, it's just a reality. I think the government's realizing that they don't know what the heck they're doing and that they're screwing it up for everybody. So they're going to start trying some wild experimental stuff. That's going to be, you know, there to try to keep prices regulated and to try to keep people from living in tents on the street. I mean, it's crazy. Like the whole world's going this way.
So you think that somehow we're going to figure out how to solve this issue?
I think that they're going to figure out a way to be able to put more roofs over people's homes, food on people's plates. Once the older generation, I think this is when it'll be really exacerbated, is when the baby boomers get to that older generation. Right now, they're all rich. They're all doing well. They own a home. Everything's great. All that kind of stuff. The ones who actually own real estate. But there's going to be a bunch that don't. So there's going to be a ton of people once they get to about 80 years old who can't take care of themselves anymore, who don't have children, who don't have family, who need places to live. And we're going to have nowhere to put them. And we're going to be just running out of resources. And it won't just be our drug addicts and 25-year-old kids who don't want to live in their parents' Richmond Hill basement anymore. And so they want to park a tent in Forest Hill and pretend that they're homeless, right? It'll be like grandma and grandpa living on the street dying. And people are going to go, oh, man.
Yeah.
We need to do something about this. How can we create a system that's going to be able to help them? I don't know, but that's going to take the next a while. Years.
Yeah, like you have the baby boomers. If you look around right now, you have a lot of housing coming off the market, like disappearing, like blowing up and burning and getting like death rays from space. Yeah. Like a lot of stuff is just disappearing off the market. And so where does all this money come from to rebuild all these places and to build all the what happens now? I mean, Gaza is going to have to get rebuilt by BlackRock, I guess, or some crazy gigantic corporation, Vanguard, or what was that one that rebuilt? Anyways, TK, there's a lot of money that's got to go out and nobody's making any money. So how is this going to happen? And then what happens next? At some point, doesn't the stock market have to have a crazy crash? You want to hear something that I heard this week? And it is true without a doubt. I think like 7 companies are basically propping up the entire stock market right now. Like if it wasn't for those top 7 tech companies, like, you know, Apple, Amazon, Nvidia, like all the monsters, Meta, whatever they call themselves today, like the stock market would have crashed already. But you got these like inflated tech stocks and Tesla and all these things that are overvalued.
Yeah.
Like propping up the
just
stock
like
market.
Supporters, so, just like, you know, I'm going to buy Tesla and you know, Tesla's a great company. And like, yeah. I don't know. I didn't look at the books. I don't know. Are they making money?
I don't know. Sure.
But I saw the percentage of shares of how many companies back like 50 years ago in the S&P 500, or maybe not even 50, maybe 20, 30 years ago, how many of them were profitable. And you can see it was just like, all of them were profitable. It's like this very small, we're not profitable. Now you look at like, I mean, almost none of them are profitable.
No.
Nobody's making any money anymore. Yeah.
One day, maybe we'll be profitable, but we have
just bring in another. It's just like the one. It's just bring in another guy. Just bring in another investor. We'll use his money to pay everybody else out.
It's the same as the country.
Biggest Ponzi scheme around. Yeah.
Except for like our banking system and our government system.
Yeah,
and every system is a Ponzi scheme.
Wait till the taxes. Well, wait till property taxes are going up.
How much more taxes can we
property
pay?
Taxes. Wait till these new assessments come out and everybody has to pay the tax rate. You know, the city can say, well, we're not going to increase the mill rate. We're just going to keep everybody, you know, 2% increase. I'll keep you guys, vote me back in. Well, then what am I assessed at? Because right now my assessment was determined in 2016. So when I get reassessed, they're going to say, well, I mean, that's just the mill rate's the same, but you know, your value of your property is different. So therefore we need to, you know, adjust the taxes accordingly. And people's taxes are going to go up like
30%, we didn't do like it right last
50%.
Time.
It's going to be crazy. But they said, we'll phase that in over 4 years. Don't worry.
Don't worry, four years.
Feel it a little bit less.
Yeah.
You know? It's bad.
It's all bad, TK. There's no good. There is no good right now.
We have nothing positive to say here, people. Just one thing that I can tell you for sure is that if you like, comment, and subscribe to this channel, all right, you will learn that there's nothing positive going on in this world a lot sooner than you would if you didn't like, comment, and subscribe. That I can promise.
This is a TK guarantee.
Guarantee.
And last week's guarantee was that prices are going to double. Remember that?
Yes, prices will double. Yeah,
prices will double.
Sure. I don't know if you'll live to see it, but they're going to double.
They are going to double because this is Canada and that's what houses
do. That's all we know how to do over here.
Double houses. Well, mister, thank you once again. I feel like today we got further away. We did do a good job
on
the one.
You did a good job. You brought some good info that's not out there in the media. So you nailed it. I think this video's.
I'm nailing it, TK. Pressure. I'm nailed to this chair. I got a feeling that I am not going to be able to stand after easy. Doing this for this hour here. This is not going to be pretty. TK, I bid you farewell, sir.
Please subscribe. And
well,